the United States is a very serious country.
We are.
Our politics, very serious. We've never done anything unserious.
It's true.
Everything we do is very...
Politics are serious. Our podcasts are serious. Our commentary is serious.
Philosophically driven.
Yeah.
Any corruption that does happen, squashed immediately, right? We take our job as the United States, as the beacon of democracy, the city upon a hill, very seriously.
That's right. And we take our jobs as podcasters, delivering you political information every week, very seriously.
Yeah.
And the trip that I have to Israel next week, sponsored by the Senate Leadership Fund,
exactly,
has nothing to do with the opinions that I may say on this podcast.
Yeah, what's up, you guys? This episode is brought to you by Raytheon.
That's right. Now, see how ridiculous that sounds?
The military budget actually isn't big enough.
It's not, but I promise these things are separate. Raytheon may have injected $200,000 into my bank account. But I'm just saying these things because I genuinely believe them.
Yeah, yeah. Hiddle Media LLC is now funded Raytheon.
That's right. Just how you believe that. That's fucking ridiculous. Clarence Thomas recently has come under some fire because it was revealed that he has gone on, quote, lavish vacations with GOP mega donors and just received gifts from them all the time and is always going on crazy vacations.
Uh-huh. Yeah, this was more recently revealed because he got, like, caught doing it.
Yep.
And the Republican response immediately, this isn't even that big of a headline given other events that have happened this week, or maybe just because nobody has that much scrutiny for any of our elected officials or unelected
officials.
It's
honestly kind of like old news that the Thomases are corrupt. We've been covering Ginny Thomas and the way that the Citizens United decision dates back to her being friends with some of the people that brought the case to the Supreme Court.
And that's what I was going to say, is that we've seen that Clarence Thomas and Ginny Thomas have been very corrupt.
Yeah.
They've had moral implications, political implications for tons of cases that Clarence Thomas has ruled on. But also, you know, he's caught doing this with billionaires. The conservative response is immediately, oh, they're just hanging out with friends. Like, his friends hanging out with friends.
His friends just so happen to be GOP mega donors.
Yeah, they just happen to be giving him enormous gifts of a huge price. Exactly. And it just doesn't matter.
Exactly. I agree politically with some of my friends, so I don't see how this can do anything here.
Clarence Thomas can't just hang out with the homies.
Yeah.
Everything's so political.
Yeah, I know. God, guys. People with positions of political power. Some of the most powerful people in the country can't have friends.
It's almost like your position of political power maybe transcends any friendships you may have. Maybe being one of the most powerful people in the country, especially with, like, Morvey Harper coming up.
Especially when you are friends with people whose opinions are directly harmful to democracy.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And who, if you align yourself with, will undermine the very court that you're a part of. But that doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
That doesn't really matter.
AOC said she's going to introduce articles of impeachment that won't go anywhere.
Yeah. She said, if no one else does, I will.
Like, she'll do, well, because no one else will.
Right. Yeah.
She'll introduce them, and I bet they won't even get out of the House because probably Democrats won't vote for it either.
No.
Despite there being enough Democrats to pass it in the House.
What, you guys saying they can't have friends?
Yeah, exactly.
We can't have friends now, huh? I can't have any friends. Like, I'm a senator. Oh, no, I should just be lonely all the time.
It's like the progressives will vote for it, right? Yeah. But conservatives won't vote for it, obviously, because Clarence Thomas supports their political agenda. Mm-hmm. Why would they want to get rid of him? But also, the Democrats that kind of use this mode of behavior as their modus operandi aren't going to do it because they rely on the mega donors as well.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
This is like a common thing. Clarence Thomas isn't going to get persecuted for it.
And it's also insane, right? Because the whole reason, again, that justices are appointed and not elected is so that they are separate from the political process,
right.
But they can still be friends with and hang out with and receive just hundreds of thousands of dollars, maybe even millions of dollars in gifts from mega donors, people who are very much integral to the conservative project, and that's okay, that's fine.
Yeah,
they're
exactly.
Still separate from politics because they're friends, they're buddies, you know?
Well, yeah, keeping them unelected removes them from politics, but if you have an enormous amount of money, you can get a little bit of access.
Exactly, but
as a treat.
They can also do politics.
Yeah. It's just aristocracy, right?
Yeah.
It's not democracy at all. It's not democratic. It doesn't matter that our senators are the ones that approve them.
Mm-hmm.
He's just there. Biden should have been packing the court since he came in. Like, that should have been the move.
Game. Put 50 justices on the court.
Like, Democrats often, progressives often praise FDR for what he did. I think Biden's even praised FDR in the past for all of his accomplishments during the Great Depression and World War II. But dude threatened to pack the court to, like, 15.
Mm-hmm.
He was like, I'm going to do it unless you start acting
there's nowhere in the Constitution that says no.
Exactly.
The number, what's the number right now?
Started at six.
It's fucking fucking arbitrary. The court's already been packed before. Let's pack it again, baby.
Well, and it was packed.
Let's just keep fucking packing it until everyone else realizes how ridiculous of an institution that it is. And we'll get into it more, like, towards the end of the episode when we talk about a decision that came from a federal judge out of Texas. But it's starting to me to look like judges have way too much fucking power over the other checks and balances within the system.
Well, and one of the major accomplishments of the Trump administration, one of the few that he actually had in advancing the conservative agenda, is that he filled federal courts with so many conservatives that support him.
Didn't he fill a record number of federal judgeships?
Yes. I mean, Biden might have surpassed him by now just because the filibuster for appointing federal judges is gone, which is why Trump got so many through. But Trump appointed so many federal judges.
So many underqualified judges, too.
Yeah.
It's insane.
Some of them that didn't support his overthrow of the election. So I guess they weren't as conservative as he needed them to be, but still very conservative and bad for democracy broadly.
Real.
So that's not great.
Not great at all. We'll talk about it a little bit more later, but for now, I think it's time to roll the intro.
That's right. Welcome back to Head in the Office, everybody. Top of the episode, I got bad news.
Bad news.
All of my Swifties out there, what I'm about to talk about, this was a request from my girlfriend. She doesn't listen to the show, but she asked me to talk about this. So if you're listening, this is for you, I guess.
Good shit.
But you know, any
but
of
you're
Swifties,
probably not listening, actually.
Any of the Swifties in our audience can listen to this. Apparently, Taylor Swift and her boyfriend broke up. That's what I'm hearing. I got my ear to the ground, right? I got my thumb on the heart of the Swiftie culture.
Finger on the pulse.
Finger on the pulse. Uh-huh. Apparently, they broke up, and that's heartbreaking for a lot of people.
Stuff. How will this affect the Midnight's tour?
Well, next album's about to be a banger. Let me tell you that.
Oh, that's facts. Hopefully she can recover.
6 to 8 months, next album's going to be crazy. Maybe the tour will be crazy, too. People will be crying.
True.
That's just a word on the street, though. Could be wrong.
Word on the
streets. Who knows? It's a developing story. Uh-huh, we'll get back to it next week. But I'm going to remind you all, top of the episode, to go check out the Patreon. Go become a patron. Get access to early episodes. Abandon the Wednesday Weenie title.
That's right.
Become a Sunday supremacist. Right. I say supremacists for a reason. You know, they're just better.
They're just better. They get the news with the news cycle. They're no longer victims of everything cool happening on Monday.
That's right. That's exactly true.
Well, not everything cool. Oftentimes everything bad, but everything
newsworthy.
Interesting and newsworthy happening on Monday.
So abandon that title. Look, we're planning to do another live stream pretty soon once we hit our new goal on Patreon.
That you can help us get to.
And we're getting into the summer here, which means Gage and I are going to have some time to produce some content. We'll
ramp up some content. Maybe get back on our TikTok live.
Exactly. You'll want some exclusive access to all that.
You will.
You'll want to be the first person to know, and to do that you got to become a patron, and at the same time it supports the show.
That's right.
And
that's
it keeps the business running, that the business running, the small business.
So true. And speaking of other ways to support the show,
that's right,
you could always go to Apple, leave a 5-star review. If you can't leave your review on Apple for a myriad of reasons, maybe you live in Canada, maybe you're a Spotify listener, you can drop it in our DMs and we'll read it. But right now we only have one.
That's right.
And that is from Apple, from a keyboard smash title. This one says, "Keep slaying, kings. This podcast is amazing. I found it scrolling on TikTok. I instantly ran to Spotify and binge listened. It's so refreshing to hear a political podcast that can bring humor to such hard and pressing topics. Thanks to this podcast, I can debate my Fox News conspiracy theory loving aunt." Keep slaying.
I appreciate that.
That's why we do it. We do it so that you can debate, Lord, your Fox News loving relatives.
Just as Tennessee lawmakers do to children.
That's right.
That are victims of gun violence in this country.
I think that brings us to our first topic.
Yeah, we'll be talking about that today. We got to talk about elections broadly, but specifically in Tennessee. I'm sure you've all seen the news. We got to talk about trans sports still under attack.
That's right.
Some news from Joe Biden.
We get to talk about women's rights continuing to be under attack.
But we are recording on the Lord's Day.
That's right. And
he is risen on the Lord's Day.
The Sabbath, the third
Easter,
day today.
Inshallah. But also, happy Ramadan, everyone. Happy Passover if you're celebrating. We're a pluralistic podcast.
Always.
Here. We support all religions, all celebrations. So I hope the holidays are going well for you all.
For real.
But let's get right into the episode. Last week, three lawmakers from the Tennessee State Legislature faced expulsion votes for participating in a protest that occurred inside the State House floor over gun reform following the Nashville, Tennessee school shooting. Their names are Justin Pearson, Justin Jones, and Gloria Johnson. Those are the three lawmakers that were facing expulsion votes. But only Pearson and Jones, two black legislators, were expelled, while Gloria Johnson did not receive enough votes to be kicked out. I think she was saved by like one vote or just a handful of votes.
But still, just crazy that they went that mask off to only kick out the two black guys.
Yeah, which is like the first thing that you notice here is that Pearson and Jones are two fairly young, charismatic black representatives in Tennessee, a conservative state. Gloria Johnson's like a, I don't know, middle-aged white woman.
Yeah.
No hate to her, obviously.
Yeah, no, she's fine. She didn't do anything wrong here.
Right.
It's the legislature that fucked up.
The legislature overwhelmingly voted to expel Justin Pearson and Justin Jones, but Gloria Johnson did not face it. And again, yeah, just mask off racism, like kick out the two black men.
They
right?
just straight up kicked them out of their like seats. Like they are no longer right. representatives,
yeah.
which is fucking insane. The only other two times that someone has been kicked out of the Tennessee legislature was, I think, the first time a couple years back when he faced 22 counts of sexual misconduct.
Mm, that seems like
and
a reason
then
to do it.
One time, like a long time ago, where I can't remember the exact charge. Maybe I can't remember what it was. I won't speak on it, but well, it was a while ago.
Even longer ago, there were people kicked out of the Tennessee state legislature because of the Civil War. And that seems like an adequate reason to do so because they're terrorists to the nation.
Yes.
Right? Like back when we actually took insurrection seriously,
uh-huh.
but we don't do that anymore because we name protests as insurrections. Sit-ins are insurrections now. So Gloria Johnson still has her job. Pearson and Jones, though, the two black legislators from, I can't remember exactly where they're from.
Shelby County and
somewhere else.
I can't remember the other county.
Yeah, yeah. The more like city populated yep. areas that are more Democratic. Biden districts by like plus 50, right? So they're going to get elected again as they're running again. But yeah, just blatantly removed from office, taken power has been taken away from them all because they led this protest. But you may be asking, what exactly happened, right?
Yeah.
Like, were they doing an insurrection on the Capitol?
Yeah, was this maybe justified? No,
so,
it wasn't.
The Tennessee Three, as they're being called, which, hard name.
So sick.
I mean, come on, like, if you're in a political fight with somebody, and they're called the Tennessee Three, you're done.
Oh, if they get dubbed That's any hard. Name like that, like, in the middle
Chicago
of
Chicago 7.
While it's going on, right. you know that this is going to be a chapter in a history book in, like, 20 years.
Exactly. Especially based on the speeches they gave, which we'll get to in a moment.
Yes. Oh, my God.
But the Tennessee Three, as they're being called, they each participated in a protest that started outside of the state capitol, and I think people in the gallery of the state capitol, like up above where mm-hmm. all the action is happening, were also protesting. And Pearson, Jones, and Johnson were all encouraging them to continue. Yeah, were all speaking out of turn with them.
And they were their constituents. Like,
yes,
they are representing
yes.
their constituents when they joined them in protest.
Yeah, and these representatives, they were speaking, obviously yelling without being recognized by the speaker, which is a violation of their parliamentary procedure.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, it seems like a minor violation to get expelled for, but that's basically what happened.
Before this, the speaker had also turned off one of their voting machines
so
that they couldn't participate in the functions of the House anymore, and I think they had refused to call on them in debate.
Yeah.
And so that's why
silencing them, right?
That's why the two Justins and Gloria, well, just the two Justins brought out bullhorns and just started fucking yelling at them, which is sick.
Which
actually,
I fully support, yeah.
Which is 100%. A cool rule break. Sometimes
exactly.
they're cool.
And the reason they were booted, according to the Republican response, is that Pearson and Jones continued to incite the protest while Gloria Johnson didn't go as far as the other two. But I reject this entirely, and I still think it's just racially motivated.
100%. It's just
because
they're the black man.
As other people have been saying, like, they have some amount of plausible deniability. If they kick the white woman out too.
Yep.
But it was just the two black guys. Like, it's pretty explicit. There's no real analysis I can offer there.
Yeah.
It's just they're two black charismatic young men and they're threats to the conservative political agenda. So they got to go.
Yeah.
I don't know what else really to say about that, but I don't know. Jones and Pearson have both pledged to run for their seats again. They'll probably be facing a special election later this year since the seat is vacant and those people currently are not represented in their state legislature. And they're probably going to win because they're cool guys.
And the rest of the legislature, I think, threatened to withhold funding from their districts if mm-hmm. they ran again, which is also
yes.
just a crazy thing that I feel like you can't do. Or at the very least, I feel like it should be very illegal to do something like that, to say that these people flat out cannot run to represent their districts, or we will financially punish the district itself.
I don't know if it's either threatening that they'll do that if they run again, or I think the city for Justin Pearson has some kind of jurisdiction where they can reappoint him in the meantime before an election is held.
Okay.
You know how like governors can do that for senators type thing. I think they were saying, we're just going to reappoint him right away because like this is bullshit. Why did you do this?
And we need representation.
And then I think the Republican legislators were like, oh, if you do that, then we're not going to fund your schools, which is nuts. That's like, what the fuck are we doing?
From the Protect the Children crowd.
Such a, like, this is not a real country. How can you call that democratic at all if you're just violating every procedure that's on the books just to get this guy out of power because you think he's a threat?
It's bonkers.
That
it's
is crazy.
Bonkers.
But Republicans, because of their actions, have unironically made these guys into national figures, both because this is wholly undemocratic and just generally an insane thing to do, but also because both of them, Pearson and Jones, speak insanely well.
Oh my God.
The cadence is insane. They're great
it
orators.
It is ridiculous. The one speech that we're going to play, the In the Well speech, yeah. I guess it's being called. That shit was just off the cuff, too.
Yeah.
Like, they are so fucking intelligent, so smart, and so well-spoken. It's ridiculous. Like, they are going to become national figures, or at least they should.
Right. And, like, immediately when I'm listening to these two, we're going to play a clip from Justin Pearson.
Yeah.
But also Justin Jones, incredibly well-spoken, like, a civil rights leader cadence. And I'm not just saying that because they're, like, young black men, civil rights. Like, I'm not trying to make that connection.
Not trying to, like, every well-spoken black man is Martin Luther King.
Right, exactly. But you'll see, like, I mean, it's crazy. Yeah. So we'll play this clip. The first guy that's speaking is a Republican asking him a question. The next guy you'll hear is Justin Pearson. It's about a minute and a half, so we'll go ahead and play this clip.
You're in the well today because you broke rules of decorum. Wouldn't you agree?
Representative Pearson.
I believe I'm in the well today because you have put forward a resolution that says that it's more important to expel voices of dissent than do the work of justice, which is fighting to end gun violence in the state of Tennessee. I believe that I'm in the well today because I, with the courage of ancestors and family and loved ones and community, stood up and spoke up for folks like my classmate Larry Thorne, who can speak no more because of the proliferation of guns in Tennessee.
So I
believe that I'm in the well today because you have decided that it is not right to have debate. It is not right to listen to the voices of the minority. I believe I'm in the well today because on the day that we wanted to honor the thousands of people who protested, we were denied that opportunity. I believe that I'm here because you feel in your heart that it is right to persecute someone who has committed no crime, who has only broken what you call a House decorum rule, which according to Section 19 of the House Permanent Rules of Order say that at worst, the thing that should happen is censure. But instead, you have brought forward a terrible resolution to deprive and disenfranchise thousands of people in Shelby County of a representative who will and can speak and advocate for them. And I believe, Representative Farmer, that is wrong.
Fucking insane.
That's the end of the clip.
Poetic in his cadence.
Yeah, it's crazy. And then the other guy, Justin Jones, was asked, like, you were chanting no justice, no peace. And he responds with just an MLK quote off the cuff.
Yeah.
Like, like word for word. Like, it's crazy how well-spoken these guys are.
He says crazy leaders. He says something along the lines of, well, you can't have justice without peace.
Right.
Like, fundamentally, there is no justice without peace. And peace would be to end the proliferation of gun violence. It's amazing. It's amazing that these responses were just off-dome, too.
Yeah. And you can't see this because it's an audio medium, obviously, but dude's fit is crazy.
Oh, cool.
Like Riz Goblin, you know what I'm saying? Like Riz Lord, God of Riz, to be honest with you. And also, Justin Pearson is a reoccurring character on this podcast, because you all may remember a couple of weeks ago, we covered a bill out of Tennessee, which would make it so local jurisdictions could just reject gay marriage opportunities. And Justin Pearson was one of the guys who spoke out against it and said, like, this is ridiculous. And then he was the one that asked, like, oh, are there any instances of people being forced to marry people that they don't want to? And the other guy said, no, but I still want to do this.
See, bro, we've been on the Justin Pearson wave.
Oh, yeah.
Everyone else is just a bandwagon.
Exactly.
We've been there. We're trendsetters, basically.
Now, of course, this comes after a Tennessee lawmaker following the Nashville school shooting said that, quote, criminals will be criminals.
Yeah.
Basically conceding the issue.
It's always their defense. They don't even bother defending it anymore. They're just gonna say, oh, well, criminals are gonna get guns anyway, so why can't good guys have guns?
Yeah, and the interesting thing there is that that's not the Republican response to any other crime.
No.
The Republican response to any other crime is to crush minority groups as much as possible. The war on drugs, the prison industrial complex. Literally, they will create the largest infrastructure to just destroy the black community that they can think of. But when it comes to school shooting, suddenly they throw their hands up in the air and say,
not
I can't
very
do
tough
anything.
On crime when it comes to school shooters. It's
right.
Ridiculous. If anyone does any drug and does anything sort of bad, that drug is scheduled. Researchers can't even access it. Nothing's going to happen. But as soon as it's a gun and it's a culture war issue that they like and that they've built their platforms upon, they can't do anything. Their hands are suddenly tied.
To bring it full circle to white supremacy, I think that they're part of their refusal to do anything, obviously motivated by the NRA to some extent, but also because school shootings are often straight white cis men. They are rarely ever somebody from a minority group. And if they were, I bet if more black men were doing school shootings, Republicans would be so quick to act to restrict their access to guns, similar to how they were with when the trans shooter shot up the school in Nashville, Tennessee. They said ban guns for trans people.
I think it's also interesting that this is all happening in Tennessee, and why these senators are so apprehensive to even bring up debate about gun legislation is because gun manufacturers have been moving to Tennessee. Gun manufacturer Smith & Wesson plans to relocate its headquarters from Massachusetts to gun-friendlier Tennessee, and a $125 million investment expected to create 750 jobs, officials announced in October 2021.
Yeah.
I mean, that's straight from NBC News.
For those that don't know, that often comes with like economic stimulus, right? More businesses in your state pretty obviously brings $125
million dollar investment.
It's blood money, right? Like that's straight up blood money. Like you are providing a space for gun manufacturers to operate, to make a bunch of money, to build revenue in your state, and you're letting kids die.
Yeah, Tennessee is directly a site of gun proliferation.
Now, getting back to the fact that these Democratic lawmakers were expelled, democratically elected lawmakers were expelled, Republicans have taken to calling the Tennessee protests an insurrection similar to January 6th.
It was a sit-in.
It was a sit-in. And you'll also, if you were listening to that clip while we were playing it, you could hear yelling in the background. Mm-hmm. Those are protesters outside of the Capitol screaming, and you can hear it through the audio within the Capitol. So people are still there. Protests are still going on
and
continue.
They never stormed the Capitol.
Right.
They didn't physically break into the Capitol. Mm-hmm. Nobody died at the Capitol.
Well, and those are important distinctions, right? First, it wasn't the nation's Capitol. It was a state legislature. No damage occurred. Nobody was hurt. Nobody was trying to overturn the results of a Democratic election. In fact, Republicans were doing that. But Democrats and protesters were not doing that. And my final point here is that I'm not against all forms of protest. If you're going to protest outside or inside of a Capitol, you better have a damn good reason. And kids dying, in my mind, is a pretty good reason to protest.
Exactly. It's like hot take, I guess. Some protests for the right reasons are right, and protests for the wrong reasons are wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Protesting because you believe in Facebook lies about the election is wrong.
Yep.
Protesting because you believe that kids shouldn't have to die in schools anymore due to preventable gun violence is right and just.
Exactly.
It's simple as that. And I guess the final point that I have about the In the Well speech, and sort of it goes to the way that these two men have been treated, is these legislators are talking to them as if they're children. Like you could tell that whole time. Do you know why you're in the well today? Do you know why you're in timeout?
Exactly.
You can tell he wanted to call him boy.
Oh my God! Like,
boy, do you know why you're in trouble today?
Jesus Christ!
It's ridiculous, and it's so crazy how he again turned that around and just dicked him.
And that same legislator that was asking him those questions, like you know why you're in a well today. This was a guy who also tried to pants a referee after a basketball game didn't go his way. That's the kind of people we're dealing
with. Like infinitely worse than bringing out a bullhorn and being at worst, annoying.
Yeah, like there was another representative Republican that was asking them questions who is, I think, either married or just in relationship.
He had an affair with his second cousin and was also someone who personally did the opioid crisis by prescribing opioids to his lover and the rest of his lover's family, which is also his family.
It's literally racist, incestual Southern Republicans kick black young Democrats out of state legislature.
Yes.
Just expel them. Like when bro is bumping to family ties, he's not thinking what I'm thinking. You know what I'm saying? Anyway, let's move on from that swiftly. Another point that I've seen Republicans, the national type Republicans, commentators and such, the point that I've seen them been making, Matt Walsh, Michael Knowles, Charlie Kirk types, is that this is the exact kind of power flex they want to see. They've been praising this move. They've been happy to
see
it. And I have a quote from Matt Walsh here. This was on the day that it happened, the day that they were expelled. He said, quote, "Can't say enough about the Republican legislators in Tennessee today who had the courage and wherewithal to hold Democrats accountable for a change and force them to abide by the same rules as everyone else. Extremely rare that Republicans display this kind of toughness."
Courage.
Yes.
Courage to bully, to use your supermajority in the House to bully a minority.
Right.
Guys, it is courageous to bully an easy target.
Exactly.
Come on.
Yeah. And let me be clear, right? These Tennessee lawmakers, these Democrats from Tennessee that were expelled for merely leading a protest against gun violence for children, expelling them is fascist behavior. 100% is an acceleration of fascism within this country. It is a huge step towards fascism, merely expressed through institutions, because you can have both legal and illegal coups take place.
Yeah.
This is happening through legal means, but it is no more legitimate than them forcibly removing them from the Capitol.
Well,
it is the same.
Even as Justin mentioned in his In the Well speech, they have gone extra legally to expel him.
Yes.
It says within their own rules of decorum that at worst the punishment should be censorship. They have censored him and them, son, by removing his seat and removing the representation of hundreds of thousands of people.
Right. And the removal of political enemies from office, just again, whether it be legal or illegal, is straight up like fascist behavior, especially in this context when they're protesting to try to protect kids within schools.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is fascist behavior. I don't Again, I hate going back to this, but it's what the Nazis did. And removed their political enemies from office.
Again, they didn't just pull out the bullhorn for fun. Yeah. They did it because they have already been steps taken by the governing bodies mm-hmm. of the legislature mm-hmm. to censor them before they had even done anything. Because their constituents were out protesting, his voting machine was turned off, mm-hmm. and they were not being called on for debates. They were already being silenced, so they had to do what they had to do to represent their constituents like any good representative should.
Yeah, and I don't know how many state legislatures have the ability to just expel people, yeah. but if this is on the table now in Republican states, like, democracy's up, mm-hmm. right? Especially if Moore v. Harper sides in the conservative ideology, sides with conservative ideologues. I mean, that's it for democracy, right? If you're just going to kick out your political enemies to quell dissent because they're making you uncomfortable politically, then that's it. I mean, democracy's done. Mm-hmm. And this is a scary, scary step towards fascism that should not be allowed. And they're going to win their seats again, and they're going to get it back.
Absolutely.
But still, I mean, just the fact that they did this is a mm-hmm. huge step towards in the wrong direction.
But if they would have done this to a Democrat who didn't win in a plus 50 district, it'd kind of be in the air, and it wouldn't necessarily be national news. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, if they did this to someone who wasn't as well spoken as these two young men
couldn't defend themselves
and couldn't defend themselves right, they just get away with it.
And if it wasn't in the wake of a national school shooting, like a school shooting that was broadcasted nationwide, then it might not be as big of news. And that's horrifying.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Because these guys and Gloria Johnson are just state representatives. Like, you don't think of state representatives when you think of like big time leaders on the political in the political limelight. Now they are.
You almost never hear about state representatives unless you're covering like a particularly insane bill that a conservative mm-hmm. brought up. It's really the only time we talk about it.
And even then you move on. Like, they don't get as much fame as like Matt Gaetz, for example, or Paul Gosar, who got censured for posting a video of him killing AOC in an anime.
Yeah.
Like, the national Republicans and national progressives get a lot more attention. But now these guys have been thrust into the political limelight on a national level. And it's the fault of Republicans, but because they're doing fascist shit.
Mm-hmm.
So that's not good. That's not good. It mirrors what Kevin McCarthy did to Ilhan Omar and was it Jamal Bowman as well? Stripped them from committees merely because they supported Palestine.
Yeah.
Obviously, there's no like expulsion rules. Like, they can't just kick people out of Congress mm-hmm. Through an act of the House. But I mean, that's about as far as they can go. And they did the same thing.
Yeah.
So it's only getting worse, and that's not good. Also, a side note, there's an editor in chief of this progressive Tennessee outlet, and they were siding on the side of Justin Pearson and Justin Jones, and this dude had his house shot up.
Oh.
Like bro's face, like after he released coverage, or his paper or website or whatever released coverage of him supporting them and coming to bat for them. He was like attacked.
What?
Yeah. And I can't draw a direct link. Like, I can't say that this person directly attacked the editor in chief because he posted this stuff, but like, I mean, that's scary. But like,
come
too,
on,
right?
Like, the coincidence is kind of wild.
Right.
It's a little bit more of a coincidence there. Conjecture again, but
again, coups can happen through illegal means and legal means. Doesn't make them any more legitimate.
I'm gonna put on my tinfoil hat a little bit here and just assume.
Yeah.
Assume.
And I really worry that like fascist violence. Well, I feel like I know fascist violence is going to get more prominent as they get more desperate. And other people have been making this point, but as their sort of political agenda based around the resistance of wokeness has started to fall, like, it's not politically salient. People care much more about their access to abortion than, say, like trans people in classrooms. As that political agenda falls and fails, I feel like fascist violence is only going to get more extreme and more unpredictable as we move forward. And that is really scary, especially for Black Democratic leaders in the South who are well-spoken, because there's not a good track record of our country treating those kinds of people well.
And even speaking to fascist violence being on the rise, I wasn't sure if I wanted to cover this week. I was thinking about covering it next week, but it feels like a good point to bring it up now.
Okay.
In Texas, there's this guy, Daniel Perry, who went, and I don't know what, in the past couple of years, went to a BLM protest, drove his car into the crowd, but not like to kill people, like people who rent Home Depot trucks do. He kind of drove his car through a crowd, right?
Uh-huh.
And then a BLM protester approached him. He had a AK slung over his back, approached him, and Daniel popped him 4 times in the chest and killed him.
Yeah.
Daniel was found guilty of murder for that, because it also came out that on Twitter he had incited violence.
Mm-hmm.
It came out that he had told his friends that he wanted to kill a BLM protester. And it had also came out that he had detailed to his friends and to various people online ways that you could get away with murdering a protester and claiming that it's self-defense, which is what he attempted to do in court. Ultimately, a jury of Texans found him guilty after like a 17-hour deliberation. Uh-huh. But I bring this up now because Greg Abbott wants to pardon this guy.
Jesus Christ.
He wants to pardon this guy in an attempt to what feels like signaling to say that, yeah, guys, it's okay to go and kill these protesters. It's right. okay to kill these left-wing protesters. And it just, it's another step on the way to being like, oh, the whole BLM Antifa narrative.
Right. Violence
like,
against them.
All of these BLM protests are violent, and just further linking any liberal protest to violence like that and saying that it's okay to go kill them, especially because if maybe our regular legal system doesn't do mm-hmm. you justice, quote unquote, I will do you justice and I will use my power right. to pardon you.
And I wonder if they're going to use the Kyle Rittenhouse defense, right? Like, this guy was yeah. approaching me with a gun, so I felt threatened.
They already did.
Yeah.
He already said, oh, well, he pointed his AK at me, so I shot him.
Right.
But it's just a he said, she said. Uh-huh. Because how do you know the other guy's dead? He can't defend himself.
Exactly, yeah.
And it didn't work for him initially, but Greg Abbott's going to come through and save this piece of shit.
Yeah, like, what other political point does that serve other than saying, like, yeah, you can go and kill BLM protesters, and I, as governor, got your mm-hmm. back. Like, you're not going to get state charges because of me.
I think, again, it also just fundamentally points to this issue with good guy with a gun narratives, with an armed society yeah. is a safe society or a good society narrative. Because, like, again, you can say that anyone brandished their gun at you. Mm-hmm. You can just say they did. And if they're not alive to defend themselves, it becomes a he said, she uh-huh. said shit. It is just, by necessity, an escalation of deadly force.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Moving on to some other election news, though. I wish
some good election news.
Some good election news. I wish the two that got cast out of their legislature well, and I hope they get reelected swiftly.
Yeah, I wish them very good career.
Yeah, yeah. I'm sure that they're going to get reelected, and I wonder also if they're going to take on a broader spot nationally as we move forward, because they're young guys, like 29, 30, mm-hmm. somewhere in there, so wouldn't be surprised to see them run for like a House seat or a Senate seat or something like that. But they're in Tennessee, so good luck with that.
So, yeah, it's tough.
Moving on to Wisconsin, though, they had an election for the state Supreme Court that we had mentioned on a previous episode, and this is maybe the most important election of this year, at least statewide.
Yeah.
And probably the most expensive state, or actually, I know it's the most expensive Supreme Court race in the nation's history in terms of campaign spending.
Yeah.
More money has been funneled into this state Supreme Court race than any other in the U.S. history, which is crazy.
That's bonkers.
Yeah, no, it's absolutely crazy. The major issue here was abortion, but also the gerrymandered map of Wisconsin. But overall, Wisconsin Supreme Court hadn't had a liberal majority in 15 years. So it's been ran by conservatives for quite a while, which made this pretty important for mm-hmm. progressive types. Now, Janet Protasiewicz, who is the Democrat, or I guess it's nonpartisan, so just the liberal-leaning person,
yeah.
won by 11% with a vote of 55.5% to Daniel Kelly's, the conservative, 44.5%. And Protasiewicz carried not only the cities, as expected, but also the suburbs turned out for her as well, because I think abortion is still a pretty salient issue.
Oh, yeah.
Even for just like your average, maybe typically conservative-leaning type person.
70% of people support abortion.
Right.
Nationally.
Exactly. As I mentioned, this is probably due to the upcoming abortion ruling and the horribly drawn maps. But for now, Wisconsin democracy is still intact, which is good for Wisconsin and also good for the yeah. Electoral College in 24.
We're holding on by a thread, but we made it, folks.
Yeah, yeah. After this big election loss in Wisconsin for the conservatives, they have taken to blaming, guess who? Young people.
Nice.
Again, they're blaming nice. Young people. I have a quote from Scott Walker, the former governor of Wisconsin, a Republican. He said, quote, "Younger voters may be behind the stinging loss for conservatives in Wisconsin this week. In November, 18 to 29-year-old voters in Wisconsin went with the radical candidate by 40 points. Digital ads, student coalitions, none of these will do. We have to undo years of liberal indoctrination." So that's once crazy. Again, the narrative is that young people are misguided, not that the Republican platform is wildly out of touch.
Yeah, it's not we're right. It's that mm-hmm. You don't know what you're talking about.
It's like, oh, our attempt to take people's rights away, limit access to abortion, make voting harder. That's not what's driving young people yeah. away. It's indoctrination. They're just misguided and we need to save them. Like, that's the response.
100%. 100%. You are indoctrinated because you're questioning us.
Yeah. Yeah. And like, what does undoing indoctrination look like? Right. It's like banning the teaching of the history of racism in this country or transphobia, homophobia, etc. They for their political program to be successful, they have to make people dumber. Right.
Yeah.
They can't have future generations becoming more educated. Otherwise, they're going to continue to lose. And this is why it's not that conservatives are fighting against wokeness or indoctrination or even grooming in the schools. They are waging a war on education. educated people are bad for their political agenda because they have to overcome education in order to win.
Well, yeah, they have to target these things at education, and they have to target these things at the cult of critical thinking, mm-hmm. because the intelligent citizen won't be indoctrinated into, I don't know, progressive economic values, progressive social mm-hmm. values by their schooling. They will be indoctrinated into it by their material conditions.
Right.
If they know enough, if they have the tools to think about why they are at the position that they are within society, mm-hmm. they will naturally be forced to uh-huh. arrive at the leftist position.
Yeah.
So that's why they have to target these institutions like colleges, where they teach you how to critically think, and maybe even programs in high schools that teach you about history, how to not repeat history,
yep.
why people rose up in mm-hmm. previous histories.
Yeah, and as I mentioned before, their political campaign based around resistance to wokeness isn't working.
Yeah.
And they've made the calculation, and this is something conservatives have known for a long time, but they've correctly made the calculation that schools and being educated is bad for their agenda,
mm-hmm.
is bad for their political success. So, of course, they're waging a war on education in the school system. They'll hide it behind, oh, we want to prevent indoctrination and grooming in schools. But really, it's, I want to make people stupider so they'll vote for me. Because if they can critically think, they're not going to vote for conservatives. And we know this is true because there's good social science behind the idea that one, being more educated is associated with being more liberal or left-leaning, but also two, being in school around diverse sets of people that can openly express themselves and be themselves makes you more open to inclusion, which Republicans are against.
Yeah.
We have social science on this, and they know this as well, which is why they're waging this war on schools.
It's also just infuriating the way that they've, I guess, bastardized the term indoctrination and turned it into this big boogeyman.
Yeah.
Indoctrination is innocuous. You are indoctrinated into straightness by living in a heteronormative culture. You are indoctrinated into the American National Project
patriotism.
By virtue of living in America. You cannot escape the cultural elements that surround you your entire life. No matter who you are, you will be socialized by society.
Exactly.
You will be. You are always constantly indoctrinated.
And it's like curriculum and who gets to go to school, who gets to be included in history, etc. Those are both political questions.
Yeah.
And as we've mentioned before, how do you differentiate between what is indoctrination and what is education?
Mm-hmm.
You're making a choice to include certain content. You can't get to everything in a school year. You're making a political choice, a moral choice, to include certain content in the curriculum. And who's to say what's the difference between indoctrination and education? As long as we are telling the closest story to the truth, the closest narrative to the truth when it comes to like history classes and classes that lead room for interpretation, as long as we're getting as close to the truth as we can, then I think that's pretty good for me.
Exactly.
But conservatives, what they want to do is inject their political ideology into the education system and use it as a way to corrode people's actual ability to think critically.
Yeah.
And that's how they want to win, because they recognize correctly that young people are incredibly left-leaning today, more so than previous generations when they were younger, and they know that is bad news for them.
Yeah.
I mean, just think of the young legislators that we were just talking about in the Tennessee State House. They know that young people gaining political power is really bad news for conservatives.
And it's like also for words to mean different things in general, right? Like socialization mm-hmm. is in a way indoctrination. What makes indoctrination this boogeyman is that it implies something extra. Indoctrination implies a sort of radicalism, right? Mm-hmm. Like you are indoctrinated into Nazi beliefs. You are indoctrinated into the alt-right pipeline, things like that. That would be a more appropriate use of the term. But what they've done is they've taken feelings that are attached to the word indoctrination and how radical that it is almost inherently, and they've applied it to just regular everyday things like two gay guys kissing on the street,
right?
Or even two gay guys holding hands on TV.
Bud and Light they're pairing with Dylan Mulvaney, yeah.
Yes, and they're trying to use that and say that this is a bad thing because mm-hmm. it's indoctrination.
Yeah. No, it's really bad. And they're gonna hide behind protecting kids as much as mm-hmm. they can. But it's just a war on education, especially when we just talked about last week, the funding of public libraries in a Republican state of Missouri. They set that shit to zero.
They said no money.
Because they don't want people to be educated, because education is bad for them, because they need to rely on fear itself motivating their political agenda. Because mm-hmm. think about it. Name one Republican policy that isn't fundamentally based on either elitism, providing space for the elites to grow their wealth, mm-hmm. or hate and fear of some marginalized group. You can't do it.
No.
You can name their tax policies, which just cater to the elite, or you can name their fear mongering around gay people, trans people, black people. Like, it's all based on hate, fear, or providing money to wealthy
people.
Same
thing goes for the bipartisan international policy. It is mm-hmm. all based on these international boogeymans that In a way, it's a combination of the two. It's based on these boogeymans that we use in order to hijack the national resources of other nations, to in order to rape their land, to make our own people, our own elites, more wealthy. Because we don't see, we never saw any of the benefits from our wars in the Middle East. We never saw any of that.
Yeah. Exactly. No, there's just no Republican policy you can point to that's actually benefiting anybody. It's all just based on fear. And a good way to get around fear is either exposure to these groups or learning your way out of it.
Yeah, fuck it. Every year they want to cut Social Security.
Yeah. And Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, they claim they don't, yet they propose it every
Those
time.
Are their principled stances.
It's crazy to me. Anyway, we got one little bit of election news before we move on. And this is out of Chicago. Another good piece of news. This is a story, an election story that we haven't been following, but Chicago just had a mayoral election. It was a runoff election between two Democrats because it's a Democratic city, like most cities are. It was Brandon Johnson, the progressive, who won by about 3%, 51.7% to Paul Vallis's 48.3%. Paul Vallis was the moderate. He ran a hard-on-crime campaign where he wanted to just give the police more money.
Of course.
That message turned out to be a losing one because Brandon Johnson promised to not raise the Chicago Police Department's budget at all.
Really?
And he won the election by 3%.
Let's go.
And I also heard that Vallis just straight up turned his back on the teachers union in Chicago, which if you know anything about the history of the teachers union in Chicago, it's pretty rife with turmoil.
Yeah.
So, yeah, pretty gassed that he lost.
That is pretty dope. That's we fuck with that.
Yeah. I heard the race was pretty low turnout, like 35% of voters, but it was a runoff race for a mayoral election. So like, what do you expect?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But still, Brandon Johnson won. And it looks like millennials carried the results here as opposed to Gen Z, like the 24 to 40-ish aged voters, that kind of cohort. So it's just more fairly young people putting the work
more
in.
Young people degrading Western society.
Exactly. That's what I like to see. All around
I
big
do.
W.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. That's a good one. That's a good one.
Let's talk about some restrictions of rights.
Oh, yet sports. Again, another week for what seems like the, 52 weeks in a row, we're talking about trans rights being restricted.
And once again, like, it's not because we want to bring it up.
No.
It's because we have no choice but to cover the news.
We're forced to be reactionary in what we choose to cover because conservatives just keep ramming down culture war issues down your fucking throat.
And this time, the sad part is it's kind of Biden's fault. On this one, which we'll get to in just a second, but trans people participating in sports back in the news, not for good reasons. Biden just unveiled a proposal that would forbid outright bans on trans students from participating in sports under Title IX. And if you don't know Title IX, it prohibits sex-based discrimination and a whole bunch of other things in schools. Title IX is pretty good. Big supporter.
We
of Title
fuck with Title IX. It's like the 50th anniversary of Title IX this
like
year.
That. Yeah.
Yeah. Good thing.
Which seems pretty cool, right? Like a plan to forbid banning trans people from sports seems like something that we want, right? The problem is that when you look a little bit closer into this proposal, it says that no state receiving, or it states that no school receiving federal funding for their, whatever they're doing to educating students, no school receiving federal funding may issue a one-size-fits-all policy for trans people playing in sports, but they can implement restrictions on a sport-by-sport basis, which basically means that the school can just pinpoint every sport they want and say no trans
people. Yeah, I was going to say, instead of just saying, split up, no trans people, they have to go through bureaucratic steps.
Mm-hmm.
To say, actually, all of these sports cannot have trans people.
Right. It's just a carve-out to allow the discrimination of trans people.
Yeah.
Which is crazy.
Neoliberal bureaucracy.
Yeah.
At its peak for you here, folks. It's like, you can not have a transgender ban for just blanket ban anymore. You can't do that.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe if a trans kid wants to join the football team, you can say, I don't think trans kids should be able to participate in football.
Exactly.
And then if they want to go to the basketball team, you can additionally say,
basketball, track, swimming,
basketball,
really whatever you want.
You can keep going down the line to just fuck over one individual if you want to, instead of having a blanket ban. This is neoliberal bureaucracy.
A quote here from the New York Times says, quote, "It would give universities and K-12 schools the discretion to limit the participation of transgender students if they conclude that including transgender athletes could undermine competitive fairness or potentially lead to sports-related injuries." And you'll notice here that there's no real criteria for this.
Yep.
You don't have to provide evidence or any conclusive results that say, oh, this is undermining fairness. You just got to think it and do it. Get it through the bureaucracy.
Maybe I think that this happens. This is doing this.
Not very great. I'm not a big fan of that.
No.
Because again, for two reasons, really. Like at face value, this policy seems good because it's preventing states from just outright banning it. But one, there's no criteria. And two, given the context of the current ongoing attempted genocide against trans people, I think ceding any ground right now is just fucking insane.
Oh,
there's
absolutely
no reason to make an appeal to the culture war like this or appeal to Republicans in any sort of bipartisan effort right now, especially when Biden can just issue this policy. After it goes through its obvious procedures. But like, this isn't legislation. This is just an executive thing that you can do. There's no reason to cede ground to them whatsoever. It's just not a reason to do it.
It's weird, especially when, like, even the Supreme Court is weirdly reaffirming the rights of transgender youth to...
Oh, really?
Yeah, there's a story I saw. I just pulled it up. That's what I was typing up on my little computer over here. Mm-hmm. The headline from ACLU.org, the U.S. Supreme Court rejects West Virginia's effort to deny a 12-year-old trans girl her right to play. Mm. So the Supreme Court, in a 7-2 decision, has reaffirmed that this transgender girl can play with her
peers. This one person.
This person, she can play with her peers. So it's like, we're building up case law that's defending this, and then Biden administration is coming in and saying, well, actually, let's make it bureaucratic.
Just like a carve out for no reason,
let's
really.
Just say it. You don't have to do that. They didn't have to cede this ground.
And an even more important point in my mind, pretty salient point from the Associated Press, they said, quote, of the tens of millions of high school students in the United States, about 300,000 youth between the ages of 13 to 17 identify as transgender, according to a 2022 study from the Williams Institute. The number of athletes within that group is much smaller. A 2017 survey by Human Rights Campaign suggested that fewer than 15% of all transgender youth play in sports. So it's an incredibly, incredibly small number of trans people that are participating.
It's a margin
in
of a margin.
There's almost no there is no reason to craft a policy about it, because as we know, trans people participating in high school or even college sports isn't an issue because, again, one, there's no evidence to suggest that they have some kind of outright advantage over other people. And two, there's so few trans athletes that you're unlikely to ever actually compete with one as a cis person competing in sports.
Or when they are competing, not a fucking issue.
Exactly.
Not an issue at all. This young girl, Becky, she had been on her school's track team for like 3 seasons.
Uh-huh.
But now, because it's just politically popular to attack trans youth, she had to, I guess, be embarrassed on a national stage by having this case go to the Supreme Court just to rule that she can run with her peers.
Well, exactly. And the cost of stopping trans people from participating in sports that align with their gender identity is state-enforced discrimination. Mm-hmm. Like, you have to get the state involved. And again, how do you check? How do you know if this person is trans? Like, there's all kinds of barriers to this that don't make any sense. So while we don't have evidence to suggest that trans people have some advantage, let's caution on the side of freedom and let them play.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
There's no reason to do this.
Especially at the younger levels when, again, because the main thing that conservatives like Matt Walsh like to ram on is like, this is a man competing against a woman. It undermines the competitive integrity of women's sports. Mm-hmm. What competitive integrity is there in middle school sports?
Yeah, exactly.
come on.
It's super low stakes. And like, sure, you can find a trans person that wins in some competition in high school or college, right?
Yeah, Leah Thomas.
Exactly. But it's like, in a country of 360 million people, that's bound to happen. Like, a trans person eventually is going to be good at a sport.
Yeah.
That's not evidence that all trans people have some kind of advantage. It's evidence, if anything, that that individual is good at what they're doing.
You know, guys, sometimes women break records too.
Exactly. Like, and then, of course, there's the point that, one, conservatives don't actually care about women's sports.
Not at all.
They just are doing this because they hate trans people. And two, it's like, are we going to start kicking out people like Michael Phelps because they're genetically predisposed to be good at swimming? No.
Michael Phelps
not.
Because his he's got longer limbs than everyone else. That's an unfair advantage.
Right.
Are we going to start genetically discriminating against people?
Right.
No, we're not going to fucking do that because that would be ridiculous. And again, it sucks that this is devolving into a transgender sports conversation because it feels like everything always does.
Yeah.
But they always talk about these unfair advantages without having medical consensus to cite.
There's no evidence.
Because there is no medical consensus on whether or not these are unfair. Like, it's unfair for a transgender athlete to participate in these things. So why don't you shut the fuck up and wait for any point to come out in favor of you, if any point even does come out?
Well, yeah, and it's like, sure, the literature, the scientific literature on like trans people participating in sports is super small because it hasn't been an issue until it became an issue politically.
And studies take time.
And studies do take time, but while we don't have evidence, let's, again, caution on the side of freedom and let people do what they want to do because we don't have evidence. Like, there's trans people aren't winning every single fucking medal out there in women's sports right now.
Yeah.
It's not happening.
Yeah.
We don't have evidence to conclude it's an issue. Conservatives just like to hyper-focus on one instance of a trans person doing well one time and say like, oh, look, Western civilization is falling apart and we should kill these people.
Or they like to just fucking create issues. There's a case I read about last week about there was this powerlifting competition going on in Canada. I can't remember the exact details because I just found it when I was trolling the conservative Reddit last week. But there was a powerlifting competition going on in Canada. And part of their rules for the competition was that transgender athletes were allowed to compete. And they had stated that they were committed. They weren't going to question you. You were only going to have to just like show photo ID. You could compete under any gender that you identify with. And so just this cis dude went and just competed as a woman. just to prove a point.
Oh my
it's
God.
It's like, dog, you're not proving a point. Dog. You're just being a fucking dickhead.
That's the thing, is like conservatives fearmonger all the time about, you know, trans women going into the bathroom and harassing people or trans women participating in sports just so they can win. But the only people that actually do that are fucking conservatives. Like there was this was several months ago. I forgot to bring it up on the pod, but there was this one instance of a cis guy pretending to be a trans woman walking into the women's bathroom and harassing people. Then it came out he was just a cis person. It's like the cis guys are the ones doing this. It's not trans people.
He just wanted to do two bad things. One, he just wanted to harass women. And two, he just wanted to pin that harassment of women on a minority group.
Right. Like, this is them doing it. Everything they say is a fucking admission of guilt. I'm sick of it.
It's just like how a conservative is more likely to assault someone. A conservative politician or senator is more likely to assault someone in a bathroom than a trans person.
There's been more members of the GOP to assault people in bathrooms than trans people have assaulted people in bathrooms. Like, come on, man. Come on, man. Also, if we're, I mean, it, since this is on the topic of like the kind of our descent into fascism in this country, I do think that the thing about women's sports and all the fear mongering about that from conservatives is just another, I don't know, manifestation of their growing tendencies towards fascism. Mm-hmm. Because fascism will take any issue that they think is politically salient or they think is politically valuable that they can fight without being just labeled as Nazis. And they'll fight that issue, right? And I think trans people in sports is just another one of those venues where they think they can push the issue, gain political popularity while demonizing a group without facing any real consequences. Yeah. And that's why they continue to push it. Again, not because they actually care about women's sports, but because they just want to find a way to hate on trans people while not seeming bigoted, while seeming reasonable.
And their ideology just demands that there be someone to scapegoat for various issues in order to garner political support.
Right, exactly. So this policy from the Biden administration, pretty bad. Don't concede to these people that are actually evil.
No.
And unironically, this gets me back on my like gender abolition shit. like I was thinking about this on the drive over to the pod today. It's just like, God damn, like I feel like gender as a concept, like socially, it's not real.
No,
right?
It's not.
There are very, very few things, if any, that come from our biological characteristics as like our biological sex characteristics that actually correspond with the social behaviors that we portray. Like, for example, what's the biological basis for pink being a girl's color? There's none.
Exactly.
Right?
What's
the biological basis for women wearing heels? There is none because men have wore heels in the past. Mm-hmm. Like the behaviors that we associate with certain sex characteristics or gender identities, it's all arbitrary. And I honestly think it only holds us back. 100%. Like it's just ridiculous to me.
It just doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. We've created these arbitrary institutions and arbitrary social values surrounding gender that is also arbitrary. Mm-hmm. It stands on nothing. There's no ground for it to stand on, yet we as a society just collectively uphold it.
Right.
For no discernible reason.
I don't understand. I feel like gender is just this arbitrary thing that we just, it's not necessary. Like it doesn't serve any social function. It doesn't hold us together. If anything, it only makes things worse because there's all kinds of examples of the patriarchy and the perceived superiority of masculinity hurting both men and women because these insane expectations are set for men that they can't meet and then they devolve into toxic masculinity and women are treated as, you know, feminine people are treated as something to be displayed or, you know, treated as lesser than. It's just, it's a bad system and we should get rid of it. Like, I don't like it.
It's a bad system. It's dumb. It's stupid.
Like, I know it's not like a, I mean, I guess it is legally supported in a lot of different ways, but in terms of how we view gender socially, I think I'm a gender abolitionist. It's just silly. Like, what's the fucking point, dog?
It's corny. Why was it controversial for a Prince to put on a dress? Why was it controversial for Young Thug to wear a dress on Jeffrey? It was hard.
Why can't people do whatever they want without facing an enormous amount of social pressure to conform to some arbitrary set of characteristics that are very loosely, if at all, tied to their sex characteristics?
Yeah.
It doesn't make any sense to me.
Why is it always a big deal when Harry Styles puts on a dress and is on like GQ magazine?
Right.
Why is that politically a big deal?
Yeah,
it shouldn't be. It should be a big deal within fashion because it looks bad when he does it and he doesn't do it right. And I have an infinite amount of fucking takes about this. But the only thing political about like that should be the big political headline about Harry Styles putting on a fucking dress is that he is being propped up as another example of white mediocrity at the expense of other black people who've done it before and done it better, like Young Thug.
So much, that's the
it's
only
ridiculous.
Acceptable political take.
God, Harry Styles always being touted as this fucking men's fashion icon, revolutionizing men's fashion. ASAP Rocky has done more to quote feminize men's fashion in a actual tangible and real material way than Harry Styles ever will.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't make me want to put on like anything that Harry Styles wears when he goes on and wears these ridiculous fits, but ASAP Rocky though,
right?
That's why I wear the pearls, baby. Come on.
And Harry Styles gets all the acclaim, right? Yeah. He's the one who's like, oh my God, he's so brave.
Yeah.
But it's like, and that's the only politically correct take. Like, you know, 100%, or politically acceptable, the one that I will accept.
That we should analyze, like, politically. Gender's stupid.
Right.
But we have to. We have to, because we're forced into this weird, arbitrary construct.
Yeah, this supposed dichotomy between, like, masculine and feminine that I think it just shouldn't exist. Like, there's just no reason.
Yeah, girl, I don't see any reason men work, for it. You know?
Like, yeah. I think
don't want
to
work.
We should be able to identify that some of these, similar to, like, whiteness, like, these social constructs are bad for us because they are inherently exclusionary. They're built to be exclusionary. Then they cause all kind of problems, like when like the TERFs feel like trans women adopting feminine characteristics somehow detracts from their femininity. Mm-hmm. It's ridiculous. It only causes problems for us. I don't think it should exist.
Oh, 100%. You should be able to. We see it so much with the Dylan Mulvaney rhetoric.
Yeah.
Aside from him just being attacked. Her, sorry.
Yeah.
For just being attacked. My bad. For being on the cover of Bud Light and things like that. It's just the fact that people say that she is making a mockery of femininity.
Mm-hmm.
Like, okay, they're like, oh, I've never seen a girl act like this. I have.
Right.
I've seen many women act like this.
It
doesn't matter. And it's also corny because you're recognizing that gender is a performance and you are putting people in a box that shouldn't exist.
It's just like, why does it matter, man? Like, just let people do whatever they want to do.
Exactly. Let people
dress and look how they want to look if that's what makes them feel good about themselves. Yeah. I don't think it should matter.
It shouldn't. It's dumb. It's corny.
That was an unscripted little rant for you all. I hope you enjoyed that. Let's talk about abortion.
Yeah, now it's continuing in the theme of women here. We're going to be talking about women's rights being restricted yet again with an abortion pill ban. Yeah. So Friday morning.
Don't call them birthing people or Anna Kasparian will get mad.
Yeah, she'll get really upset at you, even though right now with this topic, it's very salient and kind of needed.
Yeah. Almost like we're talking about, you know, medical prescriptions.
Exactly. Almost like we're talking about the entire spectrum of people who can get an abortion. I digress.
Yeah, I digress. Enough about that.
Friday morning, U.S. District Judge Matthew, I don't know how to fucking say this dude's name,
Kaczmark, I don't know,
dropped a ruling that would reverse the FDA's 23-year-old approval for the abortion/miscarriage drug Mifepristone.
Is this a Trump appointee?
Yes, it is.
Okay,
Trump appointee. And so Mifepristone is one of two drugs that are used in like the gold standard for the abortion pill. Mm-hmm. It's Mifepristone and I think Mesoprostol. They're used in conjunction with each other because Mesoprostol alone has like a 2% complication rate. Mm-hmm. But when you take it with Mifepristone, it reduces it to 1% complication rate, which is very low.
Yeah.
Keep this in mind. Right? So the Trump-appointed judge ruled that the FDA was misguided when deeming that this drug was safe and effective in 2000, despite consistent rulings within the last couple of years where the FDA has deemed it so safe and effective that they've expanded access. I believe in 2016, they again reaffirmed that this drug was safe. And during the pandemic, they had an emergency authorization to make it prescribed over telemedicine. Yeah. And then once the pandemic was over and the emergency authorization went away, they had found in their studies that, yeah, this is safe to prescribe over telemedicine. So they have routinely reaffirmed the safety and efficacy of this drug so much so that they can expand the ways that is prescribed and it is used in treatment.
Is this Plan C?
I don't know.
Okay.
Maybe that's like the regular term for it. I'm just using like the names, right, like the drug names. It
drop in the comments if it's the same thing.
It's the
I just
abortion
didn't want to be
pill,
wrong.
Although confusingly, it's usually the two abortion pills because it's used in conjunction. But
anyway,
I digress. Back to this. Part of his reasoning for this regressive ruling was that the FDA ignored petitions from anti-abortion organizations and that the organization had acquiesced to, quote, increased political pressure when initially approving the drug.
You can't ignore people that are just scientifically wrong.
Yeah.
I guess.
The FDA, a scientific expert body designed to assess these things with their unique expertise.
Evidence.
shouldn't ignore the petitions of religious lunatics.
Well, you can't, NASA should not be able to ignore flat earthers. That's all I'm gonna say.
They shouldn't. They really shouldn't.
You have to take all perspectives into account because all political opinions are equal in weight.
Yes.
Equal in moral value. Yes. You should have to take everybody's word into account. I thought we were a democracy.
Every position is equally argued. Every position has a set of good and true axiomatic beliefs behind it. Nobody argues in bad faith.
Exactly.
Nobody
exactly.
argues in bad faith. So
it's a serious country. Anyway.
Later in this ruling, in his 67-page ruling, he described the pill's intent as, this is about the wording he used, he described the pill's intent as to, quote, kill the unborn human. That's what he wrote in this.
I mean, yeah.
So you can hear the ideological slant already going in the rhetoric used here.
You can make anything sound bad if you mix enough words together.
Oh, just like he did right here. He said he described abortion providers as, quote, abortionists.
Hey, shout out flying abortionist. That's episode
such
like
a, such a
70
good word,
something.
Brett. That's yeah. such a good word. And then another large factor in the judge's decision was that he and the organization that brought this lawsuit think that the FDA failed to consider, quote, intense psychological trauma the woman who take the pill face when they have seen the remains of their now dead child.
What?
Yeah.
What argument is this?
He said that that's bringing forth psychological trauma. And ultimately, when the FDA was doing their initial safety and efficacy assessment and human trials, they failed to consider the psychological effects.
Oh, but when you motherfuckers show up on the college campuses of like 18-year-olds.
And just shove that shit in people's faces.
That's not psychological trauma?
Yeah.
Come on now.
And it's like, I have no idea if that's really in good faith or not, but what I assume they're talking about is that sometimes when women miscarriage, depending on how long they were in their cycle, a blood clot, well, what looks like a blood clot can be seen like in the toilet.
Mm-hmm. That's the evidence?
Yeah. Like, that's what they're saying. Like, that's their unborn child that they're looking at that's causing psychological trauma to them. And, yo, I'm willing to say that, yeah, that may be causing psychological trauma. But you know what else causes trauma?
Unwanted pregnancy.
Pregnancy. Yeah. Unwanted pregnancy. Pregnancy in of itself. Postpartum depression.
State-sponsored or state-forced pregnancy. Yeah,
yeah. Maybe the socioeconomic circumstances that caused them to get that abortion in the first place. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's what they're more traumatized about. Maybe they wanted to carry the baby to term, but they realized that in their position in life right now, their socioeconomic position, it was not a good idea, and it would leave them in a worse place
also,
than before.
Potential psychological trauma as a side effect is hardly reason to ban a drug outright.
Absolutely. And in other words, what the judge is admitting here is that, yeah, this drug is safe and effective. 100% mm-hmm. it's safe and effective, but you guys actually just forgot about the psychological part of it.
Mm-hmm.
Any medical procedure can be psychologically damaging.
Right.
No matter what it
of
is.
Course.
Should we ban them?
Mm-hmm.
Should we ban them?
Well, giving birth can be psychological damage.
Postpartum depression.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what
do you mean?
It's insane. It's fucking insane. And another reason that the judge cited in his opinion was that any complications that could possibly arise from the abortion bill place an undue burden on doctors and divert critical medical resources from other needs.
Yeah. To me, this really just seems like they're just presenting this really bad argument.
It's awful.
As a means to just ban abortion, because that's what they want to do.
Yeah.
Or I guess in this case, make it harder to access abortion when you need it.
But what I think is crazy about citing diverting medical resources specifically here is that literally any procedure diverts medical resources from
right.
other people. And what the FDA said in an amicus brief that they filed, the death rate for mifepristone is 0.0005%.
Mm-hmm.
That same brief compares the death rate to the to dick pills, specifically Viagra, to illustrate that Viagra, a drug that we think of as very safe, is 10 times more likely to kill you than mifepristone.
Oh my
Should
God,
we
yeah.
now ban Viagra?
Right. Ooh, that's not going to happen.
Viagra is placing 10 times more of a burden on doctors mm-hmm. and medical resources.
Our Republican senators need that.
Are we going to ban dick pills?
Yeah, exactly.
Our fucking 70-year-old senators all need that to
right.
do anything, to have their GOP orgies, whatever it is. They're
yeah.
all taking them.
I mean, I would classify being conservative as a mental illness. You don't see me banning that.
Exactly.
You know what I'm saying?
Being around conservatives places undue psychological harm onto me.
Yeah, I'm not banning anybody though.
But you don't see me going around acting like a bitch.
Mm-hmm.
That's what's going on here. They also compared mifepristone to penicillin to find that penicillin is like 5 times more likely or twice as much more like it's more likely to kill you
uh-huh.
than the abortion pill.
Yeah.
Penicillin.
Okay.
Are we going to ban penicillin?
Right,
no,
exactly.
We're not going to ban penicillin. We're not going to do any of that. And it's absolutely fucking bonkers
uh-huh.
that this ruling makes, if this ruling were to make it through appeal. Now, they have left 7 days to appeal it,
mm-hmm.
but it's being appealed to the Fifth Circuit Court, notoriously conservative.
Mm-hmm. Famously
conservative.
Is that the one out of Louisiana?
Yeah, that's the one we... It seems like every big case gets appealed to the Fifth Circuit because we're always talking about it. That's
yeah.
one of like the Reagan appointees.
Fuck the Fifth Circuit, dog.
Yeah.
On my homies, it's fuck the Fifth Circuit.
But something that further complicates this is that out of Wisconsin, there was another federal hearing about the abortion pill, and a Wisconsin judge had actually reaffirmed access to it
yeah.
and reaffirmed the FDA's ruling that it's, safe and effective.
Mm-hmm.
And so those two federal rulings are antagonistic to each other.
Right.
They're in conflict. So this might just get escalated to the Supreme Court for
oh,
an emergency
no.
hearing.
Oh, God. I mean, we saw how they ruled on Roe versus Wade.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ. It's a bad country.
I feel like it's very likely that this would be overturned by the Supreme Court just based on the fact that he's going against medical consensus.
Yeah.
And he's not even really arguing on behalf of patients here. He's arguing on behalf of doctors that could face an undue burden when people take the pill and have a 2% complication rate.
Yeah.
1% complication rate, excuse me.
Right, exactly. And like when you take the abortion pill, isn't that, that's pretty early on.
Yeah. First 10 weeks.
Yeah, so, I mean, well, I guess that's outside of the 6 weeks or 0 weeks that some Republicans want in their states, the outright abortion ban, whatever it may be. But, yeah, I mean, we know, again, as I mentioned before, their onslaught against things like abortion or wokeism, it's super unpopular. But, again, they're gonna try to go through both illegal and legal means to take rights away from people, especially illegal means, as their political platform gets a lot more unpopular.
They're going to do whatever they can. And it's just so weird that this federal judge is allowing so much just ideological slant into the text of his ruling.
Uh-huh.
Like, yeah. Come on, it's a Trump appointee, so I'm sure he's a bit underqualified.
Yeah.
But still.
By nature of him being a Trump appointee, yeah.
But still, it's bonkers that this is where we've gotten. And it's additionally crazy that he can use this shaky evidence. One man, one federal judge can use this. And if it were to stand, it would discredit 23 years, a body of work that is 23 yeah. years old, that has continually reaffirmed how safe this drug is and that this drug is safer than other common drugs.
Right.
Of an expert organization. And thousands of people coming together in the FDA to figure these things out that do science, that have dedicated their yeah. life to science and studying medicine.
Once again, conservatives practicing medicine without a medical degree of
That's
any
right.
kind, without knowing what they're doing.
That's
yeah.
right. It's fucking insane, and it's absolutely bonkers.
Mm-hmm. They're taking your rights away. Conservatives are evil.
The absolute state of American conservatism right now.
Such an unserious country.
Oh my God, 100%. And it's like, yeah, we have the judiciary, the legislature, and the executive branch to do like checks and balances on each other. It feels like nothing exists to check a federal judge.
Well, I mean, and it's even if there are checks on a federal judge, like the appellate system, for yeah. example, these systems of checks and balances only exist insofar as they're enforced, right? Uh-huh. A castle on its own, left unguarded, doesn't stand forever. Eventually, the siege will win.
Yeah.
And if you're not willing to protect our democratic functions and protect people's rights by whatever means you can, like through the legal system, then it's not going
to
matter.
If you are not willing to uphold the principles that founded the judiciary, the uh-huh. principles of them being nonpartisan and non-political by impeaching someone like Clarence Thomas, mm-hmm. you are contributing to the unseriousness of the judiciary. You are contributing to why the public is starting to turn their back on this body, as they should.
Well, and I thought like the whole idea behind modern conceptions of the court system was that they have evidentiary hearings and they pay attention to evidence and that's how we make yeah. rulings. Like I thought that's what liberal democracy was all about,
and you
is think, doing things based on the evidence provided to you.
You would think that 23 years of evidence would trump anything that some Tom,
one
Dick,
fucking
or Harry
guy
said. One fucking guy
yeah.
and a bunch of like doctors that work with an anti-abortion organization that aren't even arguing on the behalf of patients'
yeah.
physical needs, arguing on the behalf of mental needs that are just related to pregnancy in of itself.
Right.
Conflating like, those two things, and also arguing on behalf of themselves when they say that, oh, I might have to do my job and treat this instead of something else.
Uh-huh.
Fuck off.
And it's like this dude's like, oh, you didn't listen to the people that were objectively wrong. What are you doing?
Come on.
We're excluding people now. Why can't we listen to these
you
guys?
You have to take everything seriously.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing is that this just sets a dangerous precedent in that political challenges can be brought to any scientific ruling, right? Like this, what immediately popped into my head was COVID vaccines.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
anything
yeah.
related to COVID. They also said that those are shaky trials. And there's less evidence to suggest mm-hmm. that the COVID vaccine is safe than there is to suggest that mifepristone is safe.
Mm-hmm.
23 years that suggests that, and only like what, two for COVID?
Right. And it reminds me, I think there's this, I don't know if it's the UK or some other country in Europe, their national like health organization recently released some guidance that pushed back against like transgender affirming care for minors, right?
Yeah.
And conservatives have been citing this as reason to like, oh, this is why we need to pump the brakes because look, another country is doing this. But that decision was motivated by politics as well.
Mm-hmm.
A similar conservative leaning politic that wants to target transgender people and was successful in getting the NHS or whatever group it was
yeah.
to change their guidelines. And it's like, again, I don't recognize that as legitimate if it's pushing back our body of work that is 25, 35, 50 years long,
yeah.
And they just were able to capture a W because of some recent political change. Like, I don't care.
Mm-hmm.
They're doing it through legal means, but they're insane and they're wrong.
It's like, wrong. It's
I don't
wrong.
Have to recognize
maybe,
that.
The law isn't necessarily what is moral. It is mm-hmm. our best attempt to codify what is moral, but we're not very good good at it, uh-huh. as we can tell.
Right.
And so sometimes illegal things are the illegal things are the immoral thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's exactly. crazy.
Like my moral principle, like I start with a set of moral principles, right?
Right.
And I build upon that. But people are wrong outside of those principles. You know what I'm saying? I'm the correct one.
Exactly.
And laws can exist outside of those principles. Like, for example, trust busting inside those principles. Mm-hmm. Based.
Good.
Great. I love
Super
that.
Super cool.
Within the context of capitalism, like, I'll take it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Scheduling weed, wrong. Outside of my set of moral principles. Uh-huh. It shouldn't be a Schedule I drug.
Exactly. Taking access to abortion away, really bad. I don't care if it's a law. I don't care if it's a law.
I can't remember if weed has been descheduled. I might be just drug laws in general.
Yeah.
Corny.
Well, most it hasn't been federally legalized. We know that.
Exactly.
And it should be.
It should be, because that's within my set of axioms that are the correct set of axioms. Exactly.
Yeah, mine are right. I don't care what anybody else says. I think that brings us to the end of the episode.
That does. That does. I think that brings us to our list of beautiful, wonderful, immaculate angel investors, patrons, if you will, Sunday supremacists.
Thank you all for listening. If you're listening on Sunday, on the Lord's Day.
On the Sabbath.
Whatever Lord that you ascribe to,
on
whatever
Easter,
Lord you appeal
Passover,
to.
Passover, Ramadan.
Like whatever you're doing right now.
A couple Ramadan episodes.
Thank you for listening to this show. Thank you for making us a part of your holy scripture.
Thank you for letting us preach to the choir.
Hitto Bible number 2 dropping when. That's all I'm going to say.
Maybe
Hitto Book Club number 2 is reading of the Bible.
Here we are. Hear me out. We have the Old Testament, the New Testament, the Future Testament.
Uh-huh.
That's us though.
The Hitto Testament.
Gage 3:16 in the Future Testament says.
Anyway, it's time to thank the patrons that make this show possible.
Exactly. Remember, subscribe to the Patreon to get early access to the Future Testament when it finally drops.
Exactly. You'll want to be one of the prophets named in the Early Testament.
You will. You'll want to get a chapter named after you.
Special thanks to our prophets, Cricket Scrapbook Layouts, Nikki Nine Lives, Cannon Kraut, Lord T, The Radiant, Chris the Postman, Christy Beck, Talia Katz, 40% Spite, Andrew Harris, Mike Chaplinsky, Mattias T, Omar Zuno, Clayton LaFed, Mark Yeager, Sarah McRoberts, Dylan B, Kaz, Caleb Joy, Jim Bobs, Carl D, Rich Toro, Tari, Gavin Meyer, Maldonado, Hunter W, Fergalaki, Max Vesquez, Jacob Rogers, Colton Mubari, Fixer Punk, Jim Egbers, Jeff Muzzy, Ted Cruz's Boy Toy, Bagel Burrito, Cincy Alex, Brad, Joe Centrum, Austin Reed, Adrian Sandoval, Chloe Sam 601, Colleen Cuts, Timothy Espinoza,
Gregory Isn't My Name, Veryuk, Jennifer DeVoe, Big Bird Titty, Eliza, Crawfish, and Benneth Bennington III, Alexa Benanti, Niche, Big Booty Beatdown, Moises T, Sam Maloney, Two Headed Boy, Jeremy Cadrite, Ben Shapiro's Boyfriend, Jonathan Cassis, Luke O'Shea, Daniel Jackson, Daniela Jackson?
Yeah.
The World of Microsoft, Jennifer Sines, Aaron and his Gundam Gundams, Darth Father, Aiden, Taylor, Corey Chambers, Sewer Snack, Ellie N., Heidi Osgood, John Glover, Weed Thief 69, and Jeremy's mom for supporting the show on Patreon. Now imagine, hear me out. Imagine you're reading the Future Testament and you see, oh my God, Weed Thief 69, 732. Thou shalt not go against the word of Jeremy and Gage.
Exactly. You just see a quick, like, Andrew Harris, 1245.
That's right.
Some crazy
That's
quote
right.
in there.
Veryuk 1310. Come on.
Like, yeah, come on, yo. Like, we could make this happen.
We could.
Once we hit our goal on Patreon, we're like those churches that, like, you got to donate money to be
mandatory
saved.
Compulsory tithes.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, if Martin Luther was alive today, we'd be getting 100 new theses on the door. You know what I'm saying?
100 future theses.
Exactly.
Let's go, baby.
Subscribe to us on Patreon if you want to be a part of the next crusade.
Give your tithe, basically. Exactly.
Thank you all for listening, and we'll see you
Have a great week.
On the next holy day.